Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to The Law Entrepreneur, episode 69. I am your host, as usual, Neil Tyra. Today, I have a great guest, D. Todd Smith. Now, Todd is a civil appellate lawyer based out of Austin, Texas, and is the founder of the Smith Law Group, which is, frankly, one of the state's top appellate boutique firms there in Texas. And we're going to talk a lot about just what is appellate law. To be honest with you, it's not something that I really understood as well as I would have liked. So I took this opportunity to educate myself, and hopefully some of you can come along for the ride and understand just exactly what an appellate practice is and how that might fit into the grand scheme of things. I first was referred to Todd by my friend Tom Lambott, who was a guest way back on episode 16. Tom knows Todd and thought he would be a great guest. And then I met Todd down at Ernie Svensson's small firm boot camp down in New Orleans, which I highly recommend everybody to attend. Discovered that, in fact, Todd would be a great guest on the show, and hopefully the interview proves that to be the case. So without any further delay, here's our new friend, Todd Smith. Todd Smith, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you, Neil. It's a privilege to be here with you today.
Well, I'm delighted that you could spend a little bit of time with us today. Todd, tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Well, I am a civil appellate lawyer in Austin, Texas. I have a practice, a boutique practice that focuses on that area, appellate law and civil appellate law in particular. My firm does, we have three lawyers, and we have offices in Austin, the main office, and in the Rio Grande Valley down in far south Texas. We do, in addition to sort of traditional appellate work, writing briefs and presenting oral arguments and that sort of thing, we do a lot of what I call law work in trial courts or litigation support work, where we handle legal issues for trial lawyers really at every stage of litigation, going all the way back to before the case is even filed, through summary judgment, through actually handling error preservation at trial and legal issues at trial and all the post-trial stuff that leads to appeal. So we like to get involved in cases as soon as we can in the process, and that allows us to hopefully help shape the outcome in a positive way for our clients and the trial lawyers that refer cases to us.
Well, I'm going to expose my own ignorance here a little bit, explore this a little further, because, you know, I litigate cases, both in family law and personal injury, and I'm not sure I really understand the niche that a firm like yours is capable of supporting. So let me work backwards a little bit. So in terms of the type of cases that make their way to your firm, are we talking about complex civil litigation, you know, the kind that the big law firms take on routinely, or is it, you know, a moderate amount of complexity, or, you know, bread and butter type civil cases?
It's generally not going to be bread and butter type civil cases, because most lawyers are capable, certainly, of handling those sorts of things within their own practice areas. We tend to get involved in cases that are at least a moderate level of complexity, with legal issues that aren't necessarily settled, or there's a split of authority among the different mid-range appellate courts in Texas. And of course, yes, we do handle more complex matters, and that's really sort of the sweet spot for us, is somewhere mid-range to complex that justifies the expense of bringing on an additional lawyer as second or third chair, perhaps even in the trial court, to kind of monitor the legal issues and how it's all shaping out. And that gives us the ability to get the case ready for appeal if an appeal is going to happen or likely to happen. And it does require some forethought on the part of the trial lawyer to realize, hey, this is something that, you know, I'm not sure that I'll be in a good position to handle by myself. I need to bring in someone who can sort of focus on these external, non-factual issues and help steer the ship in the right direction in case there is an appeal, and hopefully to achieve the best result for the client.
So I guess if you come across a case like that, which is on, you know, somewhat of the cutting edge of legal authority, I mean, one alternative is to say, look, this is not something I think I can handle. I think I need to get somebody else in here to do the case themselves, and maybe I can sit second chair and learn from it, or else maybe I bring somebody else in who always has a view on what happens if this goes up on appeal, and what do I need to do at the lower level to preserve that appellate argument. And so that's either one of those situations sounds like it would be something that your firm would be capable of stepping in on.
Well, we would prefer the second one, alternative. We don't profess, at least as a firm, we don't profess to be trial lawyers. We really are appellate counsel, although one of my partners is a very experienced first-year litigator and does a great job of it. We're able to use her skill set, you know, in a little different way than mine, because she does a lot more litigation support kind of work, and that really benefits the firm's clients overall. But the second scenario that you described is really the ideal scenario for us, because then we don't have to worry about being in charge of handling expert witnesses or dealing with discovery issues or the things that really, you know, are super time consuming, and it's hard to show the client, you know, any tangible result during those phases of the case. And with us, we really specialize. We hone in on the legal issues and the things that are likely to impact a future appeal, and that not having the responsibility of dealing with expert witnesses and discovery and the like really allows us to be free of those distractions and really hone in on the issues that we need to.
So then are you really kind of, you know, for lack of a better word, you know, holding the attorney's hand and just making sure that whatever they're doing at the trial court level is not going to compromise the client's position should the matter go to appeal?
I think that's one way of describing it.
Uh-huh.
I would prefer...
As I said, I'm showing my ignorance here. So
No.
It's, you know, forgive me if it sounds like I'm trivializing it. I'm just trying to understand a little better.
Well, I'll put a little different spin on it.
Okay.
My spin is that we would join the trial team and be part of the trial team and shepherd the trial lawyers past the landmines that could pop up. That they, because they're focusing on trying the case and all, you know, being down in the weeds, so to speak, on the details of trying the case, they're not thinking about, you know, what happens next. They're thinking about winning the case based on the facts that they're presenting to the jury or to the judge in a bench trial. And, you know, we're sort of the dispassionate observer that helps to steer the ship. Or, you know, I like shepherding is a good analogy.
I was just going to say that's a great analogy, because it really does help focus more so than holding the attorney's hand. I like shepherding. That really works.
But I have to be careful in how I present, you know, what we do to our lawyer clients, because I certainly don't want to come off as patronizing them. And so here, let me hold your hand. I'd much rather say, let me help you navigate, you know, past the landmines.
Yeah, navigate the landmines or shepherd you, you know, through the dark valleys.
Exactly.
What are there a lot? Again, I'm showing my ignorance. Are there a lot of attorneys in the appellate market in Texas, or is it kind of a narrow group of folks?
We are one of I think Florida and California and Texas, I believe, are the only jurisdictions that have a board certification in civil appellate law. We actually now have a criminal appellate specialization as well, but there's an organization called the Texas Board of Legal Specialization. And it pretty much does exactly what the name implies. It screens folks and tests them and makes sure that they're qualified to hold themselves out as specialists in given legal areas. And so we are, those of us that have gone through the requirements to achieve that label, can hold ourselves out in Texas as specialists. And like I said, California and Florida, I think are the only two others. So with that, that sort of answers your question to some degree, because there's enough people around that this bar, the arm of the bar has determined that this is a specialization that ought to be offered and that they test for. And so there are a good number of appellate lawyers, including plenty who don't have the board certification achievement, who practice. There are plenty of folks who practice that area.
You know, I think the first time we heard about, or that I heard about, this extra level of certification in Texas was from a previous guest on the show, Claude DeClue, on episode 19. And he was one who had worked very hard at helping to design that certification, if I remember correctly.
I'm sure I heard that episode. I've known Claude for many years, and that wouldn't surprise me a bit.
Isn't he from, I'm just, again, going off of memory, isn't he from Austin?
He's here in Austin.
That's what I thought.
He's here in Austin as well. But back to your question, we have, unlike a lot of other states, I mean, Texas is a big state. You know, we have 254 counties, each of which generates its own level of litigation to some extent. And those counties feed into 14 intermediate courts of appeals. And then up to a Supreme Court and a Court of Criminal Appeals, which handle, the Supreme Court handles all civil cases, and the Court of Criminal Appeals is the highest court for criminal matters. And so, you know, if we have enough work to support 14 intermediate appellate courts, you know, there's a lot of lawyers that do that kind of work, including trial lawyers who handle their own appeals. But they're, you know, between the board certification and just the sheer number of cases, There is a lot of appellate work coming through Texas, although there's been a serious downturn over the last 10 or 15 years in litigation. I think that's sort of a national trend, rather. Mm-hmm. But the competition is pretty intense because there are a considerable number of board-certified civil appellate lawyers. And then here in Austin, I don't know how much you know about Austin, but it's kind of the place everybody wants to be. And we have our center of state government here. And so there are a lot of lawyers in this town. It's kind of akin to Washington, D.C. in that way, and your neck of the woods. So there are plenty of very good lawyers who do what I do here in Austin, which does make the competition pretty stiff.
Well, let's start and get into that a little bit. So how long have you been doing this? Have you always been in appellate practice, or did you start off in another arena?
After law school, I spent 2 years clerking for a Texas Supreme Court Justice, Raul Gonzalez, who's been retired for a number of years now. And then I went to a big firm, used to be called Fulbright & Jaworski. It's now Norton Rose Fulbright. And I had the benefit of being able to spend about half my time in traditional litigation and about half my time working on appellate cases. And that was kind of the arrangement that we made when I came into the firm. And it was a great experience because I got to have sort of the best of both worlds. I got to do the appellate work that I wanted to do, which that pretty much was solidified for me as a result of my judicial clerkship. I was thinking, this is really, well, I'll tell you just a really short story. One of my first days at the Supreme Court, we got to marshal cases that were being argued before the court. And I was watching the lawyers parade up to the podium and make their arguments as a marshal. And I thought to myself, I can do better than that. And so I, you know, after 2 years of working at the court and seeing the number of arguments that were being presented and the job that the lawyers were doing, people who are trained properly can certainly do it, but a lot of folks don't either, you know, just don't have the experience or can't put in the time or won't put in the time that it takes to do it effectively. And so that was what sort of set me on that path of wanting to do appellate work. And then I got into the big firm and had the opportunity to train up as a litigator too, which I think has always benefited me as an appellate lawyer, seeing how, you know, the proverbial sausage is made before it gets up on appeal. And then after a number of years at Fulbright, I had achieved board certification. I kind of knew what I wanted to do. I wanted to be a Texas appellate lawyer. And I made the jump into solo practice about almost 11 years ago now. And when I started my own practice, it was always as an appellate boutique. I saw the niche. I knew what I wanted to do. And I basically just went for it. And it's turned out pretty well for me.
So when you were at Fulbright and as you were clerking before that, did you have a sense that ultimately your destiny was to be a solo or a small firm practitioner?
I always thought so. I never really thought of myself as much of an entrepreneur as a younger person. And even through law school, I didn't have any experience working in the business world. But as I started to get into, you know, being a practicing lawyer and thought about what my future was going to look like, and after working at the big firm for a number of years, it became fairly clear to me that, you know, really I wanted to have my own operation, and I wanted to be able to call the shots in a way that as a younger lawyer in a large law firm, I really wasn't going to be able to do. I wanted to have more direct client contact, and the kinds of cases we were working on in a very large law firm, that was fairly difficult. And I wanted to be in the court more, and the kinds of cases, again, that we were working on made that more difficult. The high stakes cases that a national firm at the time, and now of course international, and it was even international when I was there. The cases that those firms were working on, you know, as a 10-year lawyer, it's very difficult to have the kind of experience or get the kind of experience that I wanted to get. And so, I basically made the jump, and the cases came, and I got instantly the kind of work that I was looking to get, and was able to get the experience I wanted and have the practice I wanted fairly quickly as a result.
So 11 years in practice then on your own, you've solved every problem that's come up. What was, right? There's no issues left to deal with. What was the biggest challenge?
You know, the biggest challenge, I think, even through today, has been building something from scratch. You know, nobody tells you, at least 11 years ago when I started, we didn't have these sort of plug-and-play operations that you can get into now, where somebody will pretty much set everything up for you, your billing, your accounting, and all of that. And so I think the biggest challenge was just figuring out what I needed and how to go about getting it. And this was, you know, pre-cloud, right? So I sometimes have to remind myself, all right, this is what it was like when you started, and it's not what it's like today. And so I'll get on my soapbox and tell lawyers who are thinking about making the jump, you don't know how good you have it. Right. Because, you know, when I started, oh, what do I need to do for my billing software? What kind of computer am I going to buy? What kind of software am I going to run? Those are decisions.
I'm sure you had a lot of business training in law school to help you, you know, deal with those questions. No, not really.
All your listeners are going to know how sarcastic you're being right now. No, not really. And that's actually my point exactly. That, you know, law, it's much the same today. I think from everything I read, you know, the law schools aren't preparing lawyers to get out, and it's really the whole premise of your podcast, isn't it?
It really is, Todd, and that's exactly, you're spot on. I mean, I think law schools are churning out ever greater numbers of attorneys, and although the market is starting to rebound a little bit, a lot of these young attorneys, and most of them are young, their only chance of being able to practice law is to do so as a solo practitioner, or to team up with other law school graduates, I feel that the training, the education of how to run the business of a law practice is sorely neglected. So it falls on people like you who have, you know, suffered the slings and arrows and worked, you know, by the grace of whomever, have worked through all the challenges and come out on the other side as a successful attorney, to be able to go back and say, well, look, this is what happened 11 years ago. You got it. It's better today, but you still have issues. You still have questions you have to resolve. And that's why we're here doing what we're doing.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I don't mean to suggest that it's easy for anyone just starting out today. It's not. But there are resources available to kids. I say kids coming out of law school. I'm reaching that age.
It's okay. We're old enough that we can refer to law school graduates as kids
these days. That's right. There are infinitely greater numbers of resources available to the people coming out of law school today than existed when I started my practice 11 years ago. And the benefit, the huge benefit is, you know, almost instantaneous access to the information just because of the internet. And folks who are marketing their services over the internet and who are selling services over the internet, consulting on how to set up an efficient, productive law practice. I remember when I was starting out, the Texas Bar had a lot of resources available on its website, but it was, hey, you know, pull up this paper. It's a PDF. And it'll tell you what you need to know. And it did, largely. But the implementation and execution was completely up to me. And that's still the case. I mean, execution is still going to be up to anyone wanting to start a solo practice today. But the information is largely available in a much more consumable way, in a form that didn't exist 11 years ago.
This episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Market Circle, the makers of Daylight. Do you want to help more clients but don't have the resources? Do you feel overwhelmed by the amount of work to do that you can't even think about getting new clients? If this is you, I urge you to try out Daylight. Daylight is the Mac CRM that streamlines your practice and can save you hours of work each week. Daylight has helped thousands of small businesses, including my own, to manage more clients and cases without adding stress nor chaos. With Daylight, you don't need to fumble through files or notes to know where you are in a case. There's no more CCing your assistant on emails or passing around spreadsheets. Because Daylight now has a new team view that helps you see what everyone in your firm is working on. You can see everyone's appointments and tasks and easily schedule meetings for the entire team or a portion thereof. To learn how Daylight can help your firm, visit marketcircle.com/daylight. Be sure to let them know you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur to get a 50% discount on your first monthly subscription. That's Market Circle, the makers of Daylight. In addition, I want to tell you about my friends at Spotlight Branding. I trust them to manage the internet presence for my law firm, and I recommend them to solo lawyers every chance I get. They build a great website for me, and they use video marketing, social media, email marketing, and more to keep me top of mind with my referral network. And this helps me generate more referrals and more business for my firm. Their services are designed to help lawyers get better results out of the resources they're already investing into marketing and business development. They create an internet foundation that makes all of your marketing work better. That's because these days, almost every potential client is going to check out your web presence before they hire you. It's important that you create a strong first impression. And that's what Spotlight Branding has done for me, and they can do it for you too. So visit spotlightbranding.com to learn more. They're even offering a free gift for our podcast listeners, which you can access at spotlightbranding.com/TLE. In talking with a bunch of folks on this podcast, we see a number of trends that are apparent today that were not even remotely in existence 10, 15 years ago. And you touched on several of them, that instantaneous access to data, largely through the cloud, which allows offices to run in near virtual environment or completely virtually without a brick and mortar presence, online marketing of services and the delivery of services online. I think those are the three kind of sea changes that we're seeing in the marketplace. And there's an argument to be made that if law firms don't recognize that now that they're going to be left behind a little bit. I know a friend of mine referred an article to me not so long ago that said our law firms becoming obsolete.
Mm-hmm.
And it's largely due to these three, you know, as I said, waves of change that are rippling through the practice.
Oh, there's definitely change going on. I mean, I'm reading about virtual law firms all the time. And I read somewhere recently that one of the better known, larger, non-brick and mortar law firms expects to crack the AmLaw 250 in the next year or so. And, you know, that's a model to look at for anyone who's trying to grow a practice. If you can keep your overhead down by working out of your house, and if you can collaborate with other lawyers, even in other cities in a similar environment, the technology is such nowadays that, I mean, I can communicate with my partner down in far South Texas almost as easily as I can communicate with my partner that offices right next door to me. And, you know, we're using the tools that are available to us to do that. And there's really just no need to be location centric, at least not nearly as much as there used to be. You know, I can practice. That's one of the reasons why I tell people I'm a Texas appellate lawyer. And it's not an uncommon description among folks that do what I do, but yeah, I have the ability to take a case that's going up on appeal from almost anywhere in the state and handle it effectively just because the technology has changed so much. We're e-filing. I mean, all our communications with the courts are even electronic these days. So it is definitely a different world than it was. When I started, we had to file paper briefs and everything had to go by mail. And, you know, I'd get a postcard in the mail notifying me about a result in a case. And now it shows up on my computer. So the folks who are technologically savvy can definitely utilize these tools and really have a leg up on where folks like I would have been all those years ago.
Well, I was first referred to you by our friend Tom Labatt, who was a guest on the show way back on episode 16. And when Tom said that you were one of his clients, that let me know that, true and dear to my heart, you're an Apple guy.
Oh, yeah.
Now we're in our sweet spot here. So your office is all Apple all the time, is it not?
Largely. I mean, the answer as a practical matter is yes. One of my partners holds out and has a laptop that's not an Apple product, but it's his personal laptop. And I actually do provide, the firm provides him an Apple computer for here in the office. But we're able to have his laptop interface as necessary for him when he's on the road. And that's just what he prefers. We have the flexibility to do that. I was not, you know, going back to the decisions you have to make when you're first starting a practice, I was trained up in a PC environment and didn't know any better and had never bought a single Apple product 11 years ago, even though I certainly was aware of it. So we've only been all Apple for probably about 4 years now.
Oh, so you transitioned.
We transitioned. I started off with a Dell laptop.
What was the impetus for transitioning?
Being tired of wearing the IT hat.
There you go.
In the firm. And just, I had heard enough from my lawyer friends who used Apple products. And I decided, you know what, I'm investing too much of my time. I don't want to make the jump at this point to hire, you know, even on a part-time basis, an IT consultant. I know enough about the tech that I can do it. And so I made the jump and never looked back. And I haven't had anything but an Apple product in my personal office or at home since then. We've gotten rid of everything PC. And of course, as you allude, about a little over a year ago, I made the smart decision to bring Tom's firm in and just handle our IT, including all the Mac stuff, because there's a lot of stuff that goes on and should go on behind the scenes. If you're not using a service like that, it's still going to take a lot of time.
Particularly when you start to scale up, as you have done, when you add two or three attorneys, and now, you know, if it's just you yourself, you probably can because of the reduced IT requirements of using the Apple environment, you probably do it yourself. But when you start to add, you know, two or three associate attorneys and remote locations, now you're ratcheting up the commitment to keep everything humming. And that's where a firm like Tom's is really helpful.
I couldn't agree more. And it helps that they monitor all the systems. They handle all the software updates. We have, you know, usually more than one side project going at a time, because I tend to be in working with outside firms and vendors. I tend to be the guy that asks questions that nobody else asks. I don't know why that is. I think I'm just technologically curious, and I tend to think, hey, this should do this, right? Right, Tom? Or, you know, one of Tom's guys who, you know, they provide a great service, by the way. I'll totally endorse them, Global Mac IT. But sometimes I will ask the question and they will answer, well, yes, it should, but no one's asked us that. So I have a good time, you know, kind of keeping those guys on their toes. But as far as the work that they do, yeah, if you're going to scale up, I would agree with what you said, Neil. It's absolutely critical to have someone like Tom's firm there to help you, because you will waste more time. I mean, even on Apple products, you will waste more time trying to figure out how to set everything up and maintain it, when you could be going out and bringing in new work and billing your clients with those same hours.
So talk to us a little bit about what you use, because I know that we definitely have listeners who are still in the PC world, and, you know, maybe they're considering changing, maybe not, but if it's working for you, you know, don't change. But talk to us a little bit about tools that you use in the PC world and what you use in their place now on the Mac, on the Apple side.
Well, I've been gone from PC long enough. I mean, Office 365 is critical, I think. And
that's what you used on the PC?
Not Office 365, but I certainly use the Microsoft suite of Office software. And that was one compromise that I made, you know, 4 years ago or so when I made the switch, was, well, I still, you know, having software that's familiar to me to do the day-to-day tasks in my practice, the learning curve on some of the Mac offerings, it wasn't going to be very steep, but I also still had clients who like to send documents around in Microsoft Word and other, similar software packages that Microsoft produces, Excel. And some of that is going to be compatible and convert, but you don't really want to deal with that if you can help it. So one of the great developments in the last few years, I think, has been Office 365, because that allows, you know, me to have all that software suite for a really reasonable amount of money, and it's compatible, you know, with either the Mac or the PC. So my partner, who has his PC laptop, can have the same software suite. It's just the version that is suited for PC on his laptop. And it really doesn't cost the firm anything. It's just part of the subscription that we pay to Microsoft. So, that was my compromise, to continue using Microsoft products.
And I think that's a reasonable compromise. I mean, a lot of people, for a while there, Microsoft wasn't supporting development on the Apple platforms. Now they've come back to it. And by all accounts, Office 365 is a great suite of products, and a lot of people use it to maintain that continuity.
Right.
What about billing?
Well, I was just going to come to that. You know, the cloud has been the game changer in billing. You've got great timekeeping and billing platforms out there that aren't software-based. So Rocket Matter, which happens to be what we use, is one of them. Clio. There are a number of others, but those are sort of the two big players. Practice Panther, I think, is another one. You can access those from whatever computer you happen to be using. So it's independent of whether it's a PC or a Mac. That's been a great development. And it just is a continuation of the discussion we were having about the cloud and how much easier that's made everything.
So are you now using Rocket Matter to do both your case management and billing?
To an extent, yes. I mean, one thing I am struggling with right now is sort of information overload. You've got so many different software platforms that overlap in the functions that they serve. So, you know, what are you going to use as your task manager? Are you going to use Outlook? Are you going to use the task feature in Rocket Matter or Clio? Are you going to use another outside service like Nosby or there's any number of others? And that's been an ongoing thing for me. I use Rocket Matter mostly for timekeeping and billing, and I'm trying to increase our use of the various features that it offers. But what I have found is sometimes those sort of all-in-one packages don't do everything quite as well. Don't do certain functions quite as well as others that focus in on the one function.
So then are you using Outlook as your task manager?
No, now I'm using Nosby as my task manager, and I've played around with some different task managers, but that's the one I've settled on for the moment, in large part because the ability to delegate tasks through it and communicate with my staff and other lawyers through it, and you sort of center your communications around the tasks. And so I was having difficulty figuring out how to delegate and track tasks effectively. And I think Nosby does a pretty good job of that. And the other really nice thing about that software is it does have a really great integration, or it works great on the iPhone and the iPad. In addition to, they have a Mac app, and the sync is perfect. I can easily track tasks on my phone if I'm, waiting at the courthouse or something like that. It's been a really good tool. What I'm finding though, Neil, after having tested out infinite number of software platforms for various functions, is none of them are perfect. I haven't found the one that I can just say, use this and that's all you need, because I just don't think it exists. So I'm constantly testing new stuff to figure out what really would work best. I probably tinker around way more than I should.
Well, that's you and me both. I mean, I think that's my Achilles heel. I call myself researching, but really I'm just tinkering.
Yeah, I like to say that I'm testing.
That's there you my, go. What's the coolest product you're using these days?
Coolest product I'm using these days. Software or hardware?
It doesn't matter. Whatever. I mean, heard you say you have your iPad. Are you using the iPad Pro?
I'm using the big iPad Pro, and I think that's what I was going to come to. Was it? It's not quite a laptop, but it's getting pretty close. And with Microsoft has put out the iPad version of the entire Office suite of software. It's pretty good if you're in a pinch and you just can't haul your laptop with you. I could get by for a while.
Are you using the Pencil?
I use the Pencil.
Yeah. See, I'm lusting after that. I can't really justify it quite yet because I have a MacBook Air, and that's still really very functional for me. But when the MacBook Air starts to become less functional, then I'm going to be looking very hard at that iPad Pro with the Pencil.
I really recommend it. I mean, for me, it was a game changer in a lot of ways because I review documents constantly. I'm looking at big, big appellate records, thousands of pages. And the software, there is a good, between Dropbox and PDF Expert or Acrobat, you can sync up the documents that you mark up on your iPad with your computer really well. But the ability to annotate a record on that big screen and have it saved back up to my file system on my Mac is just beautiful. And I use that every day. I mean, I sit here at my desk with my, I'll send you a photo of my setup. I've got two big monitors. I've got my MacBook Pro and my iPad, and I've got all four screens up at one time.
And I'll bet dimes to donuts, you're using your iPad Pro in that environment as much, if not more, than your MacBook Pro.
I use it an awful lot.
Yeah.
In fact, one little criticism I'll give Apple is I was using the smart keyboard that comes, you can buy to go along with the iPad Pro, and it just stopped working.
Oh, dear.
And it's turned out to be a fairly common problem, apparently. But I had no idea how much I used that smart keyboard with the iPad Pro, even during the day.
Yeah.
It was driving me insane. So I finally had to take it down to the Apple store and just get a new one because I was missing it so much. So I think the iPad Pro and the Pencil to me are the coolest. People, even though they've been out a while now, people still stop and ask me about it. Hey, is that the new big iPad Pro? Yeah, it is. And apparently they're working on a second generation now.
Yeah, we just saw that last week.
Because I am, I'm a tech addict, and I am an Apple. I guess I'll call myself a fanboy. I mean,
Wear it with pride, Todd.
I'm not the biggest evangelist, but it's what I use, and it works very, very well for me.
Tell me just a little bit about how you go about attracting clients. We're running a little short of time here. I want to touch base on this because my sense is because of your appellate practice, you're really marketing to other attorneys as opposed to those of us who are marketing to the end user. How does that differ?
Well, you're exactly right. My best cases tend to come from other lawyers. In fact, the majority of my work does. You know, I would feel terrible if I was the consumer out trying to find someone that does what I do to help them with a case. I mean, you just wouldn't even know where to start. And, you know, the internet only tells you so much, although it's certainly a good starting place. You know, the way I got started in developing business was I was told by one of my mentors at the big firm, you know, we need to get you on the speaking and writing circuit. And so that's what I did. I started intentionally going out and getting CLE speaking gigs and paper writing gigs so that I could present a paper that I had written to groups of other lawyers on a topic that hopefully was of interest to them and would make them think, hey, here's a guy that maybe we should call if we have an appellate matter come up. That was sort of an early strategy. And then, you know, I just kind of hit it at the right time as far as when I actually launched my practice in 2006, because there was this new thing out there called blogging. And I started doing that within about 6 months after I opened my doors. I launched the blog that I still have today, the Texas Appellate Law blog. And that was really, I don't hate to overuse the phrase game changer, but it really was. Again, you know, rewind to 2007 or so, the internet did not look then what it looks like now. And there wasn't as much traffic or noise or any of that. So, you know, I started writing this blog focused on Texas civil appellate issues. And there weren't very many blogs around at the time. And so it garnered some attention. People would come up to me and ask me about it that I would see out and about, you know, in lawyer meetings and get togethers and so on. And so that was a big next step for me is you're the guy that has that blog. I don't get asked that so much anymore because there's so many out there now, but it's still an important part of my marketing. If for no other reason than anyone who doesn't really know me but is looking for someone who does what I do can at least verify that I am who I say I am, and I've been doing this for a while, and I've got some longevity in the market and even on my web presence. You know, you can go back and find blog posts from 2007 on my blog. And so that's been a real big plus. I've also done a lot of local bar activities, you know, the Austin Bar Association, the State Bar of Texas, just to kind of keep your name in circulation. And I found that anyone who goes out and starts a solo practice, the biggest challenge, and I think the most critical step to take aside from the mechanics of setting up the practice, is just letting people know who you are and what you do. And if you do those things, if you let folks know who you are and what you do, and you're credible and responsive and genuine, then I think you have a good chance of achieving success. And I was able to use the tools that were available to me at the time to get the message out of who I was and what I was doing, and it's worked pretty well, even today.
Well, I'm just looking at the blog website, TexasAppellateLawBlog.com. We'll have that in our show notes. Very clean look to this blog. You know, sometimes you get these things and they're so busy, they got so much going on. It's a very clean look and a lot of good stuff here. The intersection, I like this. I mean, it's the intersection of your tools of the trade and in, you know, appellate law. So there's a lot there for everybody.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that, Neil.
So listen, Todd, we're a little bit out of time here. I'd love to have you back on the show and kind of pick your brain a little more about technology and how the marketplace is changing for those who want to practice appellate law. In the meantime, tell our listeners how they can reach you or how they could follow up if they have a further question or want to touch base with you.
Well, you've already identified the URL for the blog, and our firm website is appealsplus.com, just like it sounds. You can catch me on Twitter at D Todd Smith, just letter D in front of my name, or just look us up on the web. We're pretty easy to find. Or you can Google my name, and believe it or not, as common as it is, as long as I've been around on the internet, Google finds me pretty easily.
Well, that's a good sign. That's a good thing to have. Well, Todd, thanks ever so much for being on The Law Entrepreneur, and I look forward to a continued relationship, and let's hang out some more together.
I would love to do that. Another episode on technology would be great.
All right. Take care.
Thank you very much.
So there you have it, sports fans. I hope you got something out of our interview with D. Todd Smith, otherwise known as Todd, throughout the interview. I know I certainly did. So I want to thank you again for being a part of The Law Entrepreneur this week and every week. Be sure to share the podcast with your friends and colleagues. They can subscribe to it on iTunes or else go directly to our website and listen to it there. The website is www.thelawentrepreneur.com. And of course, you just search on The Law Entrepreneur on the iTunes website. And you can subscribe to it there. And that way, every week, each new episode is downloaded directly to your mobile device or wherever you listen to your podcast. So again, I appreciate you being here each and every week and hope to see you back here again next week on The Law Entrepreneur.